නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ ඒකායනෝ අයම් භික්කවේ මග්ගෝ සත්තානං විසුද්ධියා ශෝක පරිද්ධවානං සමතික්කමාය දුක්ඛ දෝමනස්සානං අත්ථගමාය ඥායස්ස අධිගමාය නිබ්බානස්ස සච්චිකිරියාය යදිදං චත්තාරෝ සතිපට්ඨානාති. Dear Dhamma friends, we are discussing various suttas in order to get some guidance to our practice. So nowadays we are discussing Satipatthana Sutta, which is one of the very popular sutta among the practitioners. Because Satipatthana Buddha mentioned as the Ekayana Magga, that is the direct path which is leading to the Nibbana. So there are various other paths available which have various other aims, goals, but Satipatthana, on the other hand, has one direct aim, and that is the realization of the Nibbana. Now, therefore, it is very popular among the practitioners, and Satipatthana Sutta available in Majjhima Nikaya as well as Digha Nikaya. And in Digha Nikaya, the information related to the Four Noble Truths are fairly long, lengthy. On the other hand, in the Majjhima Nikaya, Satipatthana Sutta, that part is only concise. On the other hand, everything else is almost perfect or almost similar. Now, Buddha starting the Satipatthana Sutta says, Ekayano ayam mikkhave maggo. There is a direct path, Sattānaṁ visuddhiyā, for the purification of the beings. Soka pariddhavānaṁ samatikkamāya, in order to overcome sorrow, lamentation. Dukkha dōmanassānaṁ attagamāya, in order to disappear various sufferings, unsatisfactoriness, despair, anguish, and all sorts of mental kind of negative states. Then ñāyassa adhigamāya, in order to realize the path. Now this is the path where we have to realize from ourselves, that we are recognizing from our own mind that this is the way to do, or this is the thing to do in the future. So likewise, one reflect on one's own mind, one's own practice, and as a result one says, okay, this is the thing to do and this is the correct path. So now one is fairly confirmed, fairly determined in practicing that path. So that kind of a affirmation, that kind of a confirmation happens when one practices Satipatthana. So that Buddha says as another benefit. Nibbānassa sacchikiriyāya, in order to realize Nibbāna. Now these are the very interesting benefits that Buddha says available in Satipatthana if one develops it. And so we are trying to go through the sutta stage by stage, step by step. And we basically covered Kayanupassana, Vedanupassana, and actually we need to cover today Chittanupassana. Now let me start a little again from Kayanupassana, because Buddha in Anapanasati Sutta, during his explanation related to the Chittanupassana section, he says, Naham bhikkhave muttasatissa asampajanassa anapanasati bhavanam vadami. So this is where Buddha give a sort of a warning that if one has wavering mindfulness, not strong mindfulness but fairly weak mindfulness, and again if doesn't have well-established clear comprehension, then he does not recommend Chittanupassana. So this actually comes in the state this statement actually comes in the Anapanasati Sutta. Probably we'll discuss it in another time. And there at this Chittanupassana section, he emphasized this statement. So that basically shows us, in order to get on to Chittanupassana, we need some amount of mindfulness and clear knowing or clear comprehension. So that's why it is quite important to go in a gradual path rather than immediately trying to jump to some other stages where we are not yet capable of. So that's why practicing starting from Kayanupassana is quite easy in a way, and it is possible to do, and one can develop gradually if one starts with Kayanupassana. So therefore, if anyone teaching Satipatthana starts with Kayanupassana, because that is somewhere we can start with. We can start our journey to our spiritual quest. Now, in Kayanupassana, if we again go to Anapanasati, where we are trying to be mindful about breathing, so there Buddha very simply starts as Sato Vasasati, Sato. If when one breathes in, one is aware that one is breathing in. When one breathes out, one is aware that one is breathing out. So it is in a way very straightforward, but you as practitioners may know, even though the statement, even though the task appears very easy, when you are practically doing it, it is extremely difficult. So therefore, it is one important thing that simplicity does not mean that it is easy to do. On the other hand, simplicity is the one taking us to more profound understanding. So we should not complicate the system or complicate the method. And if so, we are actually going in the wrong direction. So we have to keep the method simplified as much as possible, simple as much as possible. But we have to develop ourselves in order to tally with that simplicity. So this is something difficult for us because our minds are fairly complicated, and even today our minds are extremely complex in a way. If we compare the minds of the Buddha's period, so the people are fairly simple. They are simply depending on agriculture, and they don't have so many gadgets. They didn't have internet, they didn't have so many vehicles, Facebook, WhatsApp, none of them were there. So they are simply having a very simple lifestyle. So they assume that he is the father going to the paddy field and maybe doing something and coming back home, and everybody is at home, children, wife, and they are all living in harmoniously, and they have something to say, practice, that is the Buddha's teaching. So likewise, the setup is fairly simple. So their thinking is not that complicated. But nowadays we have so many things, news are coming from all everywhere in the world, so we are also so eagerly listening to them. On top of that, we are watching movies, TV, news, this and that, newspapers. So ultimately our mind become extremely corrupted. So such a mind, purifying such a mind is not that easy. So therefore we need to understand the sort of context that where we are living now. It is fairly different from during the Buddha's times. Therefore it may take a little time for us in order to get on to Chittanupassana. So that's why understanding or practicing Kayanupassana is very important for us, because that actually opens the path in a more simple manner, more doable manner in a way. Buddha asks us to look at the breath, and when it is the in-breath, we are recognizing this is in-breath. When it is out-breath, we are recognizing this as out-breath. So if one continues this task, then we can say our mindfulness improving, because assume you started your practice 2 weeks ago, so at the beginning you couldn't keep your attention on even 5 breaths. Your mind constantly distracted. But now, maybe you can keep your attention on 20 breaths continuously. So that indicates fair amount of mindfulness, fair amount of concentration, kind of a restraint that we have developed. So likewise, we have to be very humble in getting to the practice. Rather than thinking that we are in the 21st century, I have this degree, that degree, or I am this so and so, I have this kind of a designation. So all these today's designations or today's norms are not that relevant when we are coming to the practice. We simply have to come with a beginner's mind, childlike mind, so that humbly we can get into the practice. Now, if we are continuing our practice, we can say we are able to keep our attention on the breath, and there we can distinguish breath is in a way the physical process, a physical activity. The knowing mind, this observing mind, is the mental activity. So we are doing some sort of a synchronization where there is a physical ongoing process, and that physical ongoing process being observed by our mental process. And typically our mental process never stay with this physical process. It constantly think on various past incidents, memories, or distract towards the future, thinking about various plans, various wishes. So therefore this synchronization very rarely happens. So we are now trying to purposely improve this synchronization as much as possible, because the physical process constantly happens in the present moment. It can't happen in the past, it can't happen for the future. At the moment, it happens for the present moment. So we are taking an advantage of this incident where there are many physical processes, and as much as possible we are trying to keep our attention on those physical processes so that we are able to maintain present moment awareness, present moment attention. We are able to establish mindfulness, we are able to establish. So this is the key point here. So the physical process is simply a tool for us to live in the present moment, to keep our mental observation, our mental activity also to the present moment. Now, once we are continuing in this process, now we can even recognize whether the in-breath is warmer, whether the in-breath is cooler, whether the out-breath is warmer, whether the out-breath is cooler, whether it is long, whether it is short, what are the differences between in-breath and the out-breath, and from which nostril the in-breath comes in, from which nostril the out-breath goes out. So likewise, some very subtle details are necessary to extract. We should be able to understand some information, some subtle information related to this breathing process. So that actually helps us to develop clear knowing, clear comprehension, in a way the sampajanya. So if one has sampajanya, well developed sampajanya, all these subtle details become evident. And as we continue, even we are able to recognize that various stages of the in-breath. In-breath begins with a very subtle level, and then that sensitivity increases, it reaches its threshold, and afterwards it's calming down and it ultimately disappears. And after a little gap, the out-breath begins. It also gradually increases, I mean the sensitivity increases, and then it reaches its threshold, and that also then later disappears. And after that, a little gap also can be observed. Then the next in-breath happens. So likewise, there's a cyclic nature to this breathing, and even that would be able to recognize. So this recognition shows that our mind now is fairly restrained. We are able to maintain attention for a long time on a very subtle incident, and mindfulness has fairly improved, sharpened, and clear comprehension also has fairly improved, because that's why we are able to understand all these very subtle details, subtle stages of breathing. Otherwise, it's very difficult to recognize all this information with a distracted mind, scattered mind. But since we are able to focus really well, to do thin slicing of time, stay attentive onto this very calm process. So that means we have developed a fair amount of capacity in our spiritual side. Now, if we have these facilities or these skills, then probably we can go to Chittanupassana, because we have some established mindfulness. At the same time, we have clear comprehension. Actually, going to Chittanupassana naturally happens. We don't need to force ourselves to do Chittanupassana. Rather, as we are continuing our practice in Kayanupassana, so it slowly brings us to Vedananupassana. That is the mindfulness on feelings. So it's a kind of a natural evolvement. So it happens naturally. It's a cause and effect relationship. And on the other hand, Buddha says, his Dhamma has the open-eye quality. The practitioner being uplifted to the next stage by the practice itself. You don't need to even wish that I need to come to these advanced stages. Rather, if you are honestly practicing, continuously practicing, the practice itself is capable of uplifting you to the next stage. So therefore, if one starts with Kayanupassana, so slowly he will be uplifted to Vedananupassana. Now he can deal with various feelings, different types of feelings. He can recognize happy feelings, pleasurable feelings, neutral feelings, painful feelings, sort of mental happiness, all these subtle aspects of the feelings he can recognize. Now he can even look at them objectively. Now when it goes to Kayanupassana, the physical process being observed by a mental process. So we have kind of a disengaged observation. Now the yogi is able to understand this process where there is an ongoing physical process and there is an ongoing mental process. The mental process can be aware of that physical process. So we do some kind of a distinguishment where there are physical processes and again the mental processes. Sometimes later this is called as Nama Rupa Paricheda Jnana, the discernment or discrimination between the physicality and the mentality. Physicality is the rupa, mentality is the nama. Now this actually changes one's understanding, thinking that there is an individual, I am the person, I am breathing. So this kind of a wrong perspective will be eliminated. Rather, there is a body breathing or physical process is happening, and there is an ongoing observing process. So likewise, the perspective of the yogi is now changed. Now when it comes to Vedananupassana, there are various feelings and those feelings can be aware of using the mental process. So the observing mind is again one thing and the various feelings are the other thing. Now the yogi understands this difference. Now when it comes to Chittanupassana, this is very necessary to understand, because now the activity is a bit challenging because one has to observe a mental process using another mental process. Because of the rapidity of the mind, so we can do it. There are various mental processes happening, but using another mental process, one can observe it. So that's the beauty here. And again, that is the challenge here. So if one develops Kayanupassana, Vedananupassana successfully, so this is not a big deal, because one knows how to observe, how one can do the disengaged observation. So this is possible if one is doing Kayanupassana and again Vedananupassana. When it is coming to the mind, so this sort of a observation is not that difficult. But on the other hand, if you have weak mindfulness, you don't know how to recognize various thought patterns, various emotions, then if you step into this Chittanupassana prematurely, most probably you will be carried away with these processes, with these various defilements, we can say. And you will be again become sort of driven by various emotions. So that's why the warning comes from the Buddha. First of all, develops fair amount of skill in mindfulness, clear comprehension, then automatically Chittanupassana will be possible. Now when it comes to Chittanupassana, so there also Buddha gives a fair amount of interesting information, where he says ida bhikkave bhikkhu saragam va cittam saragam cittanti pajanati. Now the practitioner in this asana, so when there is a lustful thought, he recognizes there is lust. විතරාගංවා චිත්තං විතරාගං චිත්තන්ති පජාන. When there is no lust, sort of a renunciative thought, so there also he recognized there is a renunciative thought. Sadosangvā cittam sadosan cittanti pajānāti. So when there is some aversive thought, so he recognized there is aversion, there is an anger. Vitadosangvā cittam vitadosan cittanti pajānāti. When there is sort of a loving kindness thought, so there also he recognized there is loving kindness thought. Samohaṃ vācittaṃ samohaṃ cittanti pajānāti. When the mind is entangled, when mind is deluded, when mind is colored, that also he recognized at the moment mind is colored. It's not that pure. It has become entangled. It has become little confused. So he recognized. Vitamohaṃ vācittaṃ vitamohaṃ cittanti pajānāti. When there is no such delusion, mind is clear, transparent, vivid, clarity of the mind is there, so there he recognized now there is no ignorance. Now if we compare these three stages, we can say the positive and the negative, the wholesome and the unwholesome sides are there. But the important thing here is that one is not afraid of unwholesome things, unwholesome states, and again one is not trying to promote wholesome states. Now this appear like little contradicting to the typical norm, where the typical advice is whenever some sort of unwholesome thought come into the mind, try to immediately get rid of it. If there is any kind of a wholesome thought come into the mind, try to develop it as much as possible. So this could be the typical advice coming from another. But here when it comes to Cittanupassana, we are stepping into a different level where we are trying to recognize the conditioned nature of all these. All the wholesome states are conditioned. All the unwholesome states are also conditioned. So now we are trying to step into this kind of a reality which is beyond wholesomeness and unwholesomeness, we can say. So that is why even when a lustful thought happens, it is not my lust. I am not the lust. Rather, it is lust. When loving kindness happens, I am not loving kindness, this is not my loving kindness, this is simply loving kindness. When anger happens, this is not my anger, this is not that I am angry, rather this is anger. When there is sort of renunciative thought happens, it is not that I want to renunciate, it's not that I have a renunciative thought, but rather there is a renunciative thought. When there is a confusion in the mind, it is not that I am confused, rather there is confusion. When there is clarity of mind available, it is not that my mind is clear, I am clear, rather there is clarity of mind. So we are looking at everything in an objective perspective, objective manner, without making any kind of a relationship as much as possible. There are these various states, and you are able to look at it objectively. You can do a sort of disengage observation. So this disengagement, unattached observation, is something that we are starting from the beginning of our practice. That's why I started with telling you about Anapanasati. So there's a physical process and the observing mental process. So there's a kind of a disengagement. Here also there are various mental states, emotions. And rather than being a victim of these emotions, rather than being driven by emotions, now we are trying to do a disengage observation into these emotions. Now this is something one has to practically do. I can tell you, but you yourself, when there are various emotions, you have to recognize them. Actually the emotion, term emotion actually is a sort of an umbrella term, which commonly used for many different aspects. And to this level of Cittanupassana, we can fairly apply that term, emotions, because the lustful thought, lustful mind, loving kindness mind, aversive mind, agitated mind, distracted mind, all these things we can say some amount of emotional impact is there. So we can understand, okay, there is a certain emotions going on in the mind, and you can clearly recognize. Now, As you continue like this, so there you are not promoting these emotions. You are no more driven by emotions. You are no more a victim of emotions, but you are able to step back and watch them. As a result, these emotions start to fade away fairly quickly. Previously, assume that when there is an emotion happens in the mind, so we being caught with it, we are driven by with it, and we are crying. We may be really laughing, we become really tensed, we become stressed, because we are a victim of the emotion. But now we know the art, how to step back, how to come out of it and watch it, without promoting it, without feeding it. As a result, emotion starts to fade away fairly quickly. Now, as it happens, now we know the technique, now we are not promoting various thoughts going on, various thought patterns going on, or various thinking patterns going on, rather we are now in a position to watch them. Step out, get back and watch. Now, as we continue, then the rapidity of the thoughts become less, or the frequency of the thoughts become less. Assume that at the beginning there were 100 thoughts per minute. But with your practice, now it becomes, say, 75 thoughts per minute. After some more time, it becomes, say, 60 thoughts per minute. Then 50 thoughts per minute, 30 thoughts per minute, 10 thoughts per minute. So assume that there are only 10 thoughts per minute. So if so, that indicates that you are able to carefully watch it. Previously, there were so many thoughts, very rapidly come after the other. So it is very difficult to recognize gaps or the lifespan of a thought. But now with the spaciousness of the mind, the clarity of the mind, now you are able to understand the lifespan of any thought. Now the practice becomes in a way fairly easy, because it is not sort of rapid succession of thoughts happen, but rather it comes one after the other, very clear. So you can recognize there is a beginning of thought, there is a middle of the thought, and there is an end of a thought. Then there may be a little gap, then another thought comes. So likewise, now you get a clear picture about how the mind works. So basically, mind has its clarity, mind has its silence. Within this silence, there is a thought coming up, there's a thought popping up. But unfortunately, when we are not mindful, when we have less clear comprehension, we are not able to recognize this as it comes in. So we started to unknowingly feed it. Then it grows, and ultimately it becomes an emotion. But at the Chittanupassana level, it is, since the yogi is still in the early stages, he is not able to understand the very beginning of the thought. Rather, once it has grown to some level, he is now capable of understanding. So that's why the term emotion may be valid here. Emotion indicates that it has developed to some extent. Now you feel it, and there you can recognize. Now you can stop feeding it. Now you can stop further becoming a victim to it. Rather, now you are able to step out of it and watch it. Now this actually is kind of, I can give you a simple simile here, kind of an analogy here. Assume that you are an actor of a particular drama, and now you are in the stage, and so many other actors and actresses are also there, and you are now playing the role. Now you are singing, you are dancing, maybe crying, and there are a lot of audience in the spectators in the audience. They are clapping, they are laughing, they are also becoming emotional, and a lot of things are going on. And you are simply an actor in the drama. So this is what we typically do. Now assume that at a given time, now you are sort of fed up with the playing the role, you thought of going out of the stage and to sit in the audience. Assume you do like that. Now you stop playing. Now you stop playing the role. You are no more an actor. Rather, you go to the audience and you watch the drama. And this is another stage. Now there's a drama going on, you can see it, and now you are watching it as a spectator. Now assume that everyone else going out. What I mean is the audience, all the other people in the audience, now suppose they all go out. Now you are the only one looking at the drama. Still the drama is going on. But now, rather than you encourage in the drama, rather than you start to enjoy the drama, rather than you start to sort of clapping and whistling and all this encouragement doing, so you simply stop all this and you simply watch the drama. There are no any kind of encouragement, there are no any kind of indications that you are really enjoying the drama, you are no more in the story of the drama, but you know it is a drama. You know that these roles are not real. They are simply actors. They are not the real incident. They are simply depicting an old incident. They are maybe depicting kind of a future incident. It's a kind of a fiction. It is not a reality. So you have this understanding. As a result, you can't really laugh. You can't really cry. You can't really clap. Because you know it is not the reality. It is a fiction. Assume you are with that kind of an understanding. So if so, now the people, the actors and actresses who are playing the drama are not getting any encouragement and they feel sort of exhausted. They feel unhappy because you are the only spectator and you are also not giving any kind of encouragement, and they slowly stop the drama. And once it is stopped, you can simply see the empty stage. There is no drama going on. So this is exactly what happens in our mind. So typically, we are in the drama. Typically, we are an actor. We are an actress. We cry, we weep, we laugh, we jump, we dance. So many things are going on. We are simply being a victim of it. We are simply being driven by the mental processes, thoughts, emotions. But you are able to now come out of the emotion, but still the emotion may be going on. Still you are unable to sort of completely stop it, but now at least you are no more a victim of the drama, a victim of the thought process, but rather you now understood there is a possibility of coming out of it, step back and watch it. And after a while, you are developing this skill and you are developing mindfulness, you are developing clear comprehension, you are developing wisdom, so that you understand these are simply thoughts. It is not necessary to make them mine. I don't need to possess these thoughts. I don't need to claim that these thoughts are mine. I don't need to be responsible for these thoughts. Rather, they are merely thoughts. And they also have the nature to come and go. They have the very short lifespan and they have the nature to arise and pass away. Likewise, now the mechanism happens in the mind is fairly clear to you, and as a result, the thoughts, the appearance of the thoughts become less and less. That's why I said now it may be 10 thoughts per minute. I'm just giving an example here. Since there are only 10 thoughts per minute, now you can recognize various gaps between thoughts. As a result, you are further having some space in your mind. Clarity improves because one after the other thoughts are coming and you can recognize very clearly they have the nature to come and go. They have the nature to arise and pass away. Now actually we are in the, we can say the Satipatthana Bhavana stage where one is recognizing the nature of arising and passing away. That Buddha says, Samudaya Dhammanu Passiva Chittasming Viharati, Vaya Dhammanu Passiva Chittasming Viharati. Samudaya Vaya Dhammanu Passiva Chittasming Viharati. Now you are able to recognize how these thoughts are arising. Again, you are able to recognize how these thoughts are passing away. Now, in a way, now Buddha takes us to this level and we can say the handling the emotions. Now there is another subtle level Buddha encourages us, that is where sankittang va cittang sankittang cittanti pajanati vikittang va cittang vikittang cittanti pajanati. Now when mind is fairly contracted, mind is focused to something, mind has sort of hinged to something, locked with something, that also you can recognize. And again, when mind is distracted, jumping to this and that, that also you can recognize. Now, you are not that afraid of that. Now, typically, suppose at the beginning of your practice, say when you are doing walking meditation, if your mind gets distracted, you are a little upset. You are a little sort of unhappy about it. But at this level, the distraction is kind of a knowledge. There is kind of a distraction happen. There is sort of a scattered mind available. And you are looking at it also objective. You are not promoting distraction. You are not no more a victim of the distraction, but you are able to come out of it and understand, okay, it is not, mind has distracted. Similarly, assume that your mind is well focused onto something. You are watching something. You are listening to something. There your mind has fairly focused, fairly narrowed down, contracted. So that is also you can recognize. Now these are two states that in a way showing us kind of a middle region of our mind, or rather not really wholesome or unwholesome, but sort of a middle. But now Buddha is taking us to more advanced levels of our attention. There Buddha says, mahaṅgataṁ vā cittaṁ mahaṅgataṁ cittanti pajānāti amahaṅgataṁ vā cittaṁ amahaṅgataṁ cittanti pajānāti. When there is sort of an absorbed mind, assume that you are doing anapanasati, there is anapanasati sign, nimitta, and you are able to absorb to it, completely absorb to it. It's very blissful, very concentrated. You are in a heightened, concentrated state of mind. And once you are coming out of it, that also you can understand. Now, the important thing here is that rather than sort of attached to this concentrated state, rather than attached to this blissful state, here Buddha requests us to look at it objectively. Assume that you are able to absorb to the anapanasati nimitta. Assume that you are in a sort of an absorption, a jhana. Rather than continuously being there, so Buddha's advice here is to come out of it and watch it objectively. Now, there won't be any sort of an attachment here because this has become a raw material for your practice. It is not that for many hours that you are in the jhana, in the absorption. Rather, you are able to come out of it, emerge from it, and watch it. And once you are out of it, you know that amahaṅgataṁ vā cittaṁ amahaṅgataṁ cittanti pajānāti. It is no more a great mind, but rather it's a sort of a typical mundane type of mind. So that states you can recognize. Now all these, even the highly concentrated states, we are not trying to be a victim of it. We are not trying to be driven by it. We are not trying to attach to it. Rather, we are able to watch it. Now, Buddha is taking us even subtle levels. Buddha says, sauttaraṁ vā cittaṁ sauttaraṁ cittanti pajānāti. Anuttaraṁ vā cittaṁ anuttaraṁ cittanti pajānāti. Now, assume that one is in the first jhana. Now, there, if he is not that satisfied, now he wants to get on to second jhana. Because second jhana is more subtle, more dedicated, more advanced. So he wants to go to second jhana. Now he has sort of a comparing mind, where he is comparing the second jhana is much better than first jhana. So this comparison, this comparing mind, we can say as sauttaraṁ cittaṁ. More and more the new states or some advanced state, subtle state, refined states are there. So at the moment, you are not that satisfied in the present level. But now looking forward towards this refined states. So sauttaraṁ cittaṁ sauttaraṁ cittanti pajānāti. So even you are recognizing how this kind of a comparing going on, when this kind of an inclination towards the more refined states is happening in the mind. And once you reach that refined state, assume that you are happy. Assume that temporarily you are happy and you feel it's the very much the unsurpassable state. This is the kind of a more contented state. Assume that now you are in second jhana. At the moment you have that contentment. And now you understand, okay, this is the anuttaran chitta. Now you are more than first jhana. Now this is the best as far as possible. And you say, anuttaran chitta, anuttaran chittanti pajana. Now you have a unsurpassable state. Now likewise, you can go on and on to various very refined absorptions. There you are recognizing the inclination towards the next jhana, more refined jhana, and that also one can recognize. And once you reach that level, that also one can recognize. And then Buddha says, samahitang va chittan, samahitang chittanti pajanati. Asamahitang va chittan, asamahitang chittanti pajanati. When mind is concentrated, that also he can know. When mind is not that concentrated, that also he can know. Then Buddha takes us, vimuttang va chittan, vimuttang chittanti pajanati. Avimuttang va chittan, amuttang chittanti pajanati. When mind is liberated, that also he can know. When mind is not yet liberated, that also he can know. Now suppose that you are doing metta. Using metta meditation, you can attain various jhana, various absorptions. So each level you can know. Okay, now I am in first jhana. I reach there using metta. And it is very beautiful, very pleasant, very blissful. So you are able to come out of it and recognize it. Recognize the qualities of metta. How they come and go. They are not permanent. The qualities of metta happens in the first jhana is come and go. It also is sort of transient. That also one can recognize. Assume now one has an inclination towards the second jhana. That also one can recognize. That inclination, that comparison. That is also possible to understand. And once you are in the second, now assume that you are fairly contented. Now you are, that contentment one can understand. And likewise, suppose one is reaching the third level, third jhana, using metta. And typically use metta finish at the third jhana. And then assume that you are sort of developing loving kindness towards all the beings, towards all the directions. And you reach metta cheto vimutti. That is the complete freedom of mind attained through metta. Now that also one can recognize. So there you can say, now these are in a way very deep. Here, the difference between the Buddha's teaching and another teacher's teaching here is very different. Very important. The depth of understanding is very different, very interesting, because if you can remember that as the Bodhisattva, Buddha to be, actually when he is in search of the Dhamma, in search of Nibbana, so he found various teachers. First he come across Alarakalamputta, and there he was able to attain the Akinchanyayata, nothingness. This Alarakalamaputta thought that is the end. So he is fairly absorbed to it. And he understood that as the end, that as the Nibbana. And that is the completion, that is the perfection. But Buddha to be, Bodhisattva, understood it is not the Nibbana. And he was able to understand it in a different way, rather than being a victim to it, rather than restricted to it. And he is able to come out of it and look at the imperfections, disadvantages, drawbacks in this nothingness, in this Akinchanyayatana. And then he went to another teacher, Uddhakaramaputta. Uddhakaramaputta has even the higher refined state, that is the Nevasanya Nasanyayatana. That is the neither, what do you call that? There is no sanya, there is no sign, and even it is not signless. So kind of an intermediate level. So it is even very refined. Now Uddaka Ramaputta thought, so this is the end, this is the Nibbana, this is the final attainment. And he is being so conditioned with it, and he has a wrong view about it. But Buddha to be, Bodhisattva was able to come out of it, look at it, and understand the various drawbacks in it. That's why he has given it up. Now this is very important, because when one is in samatha concentrations, if one is attached to those concentrations, so one's mind become conditioned, one's mind become so attached to it, inclined towards that, so and one might think this is the end. And one might even get on to wrong conclusions, thinking that one has attained Maggapala, path and fruition. Because these concentrated states, highly concentrated states, are prone to certain wrong views. So this is very important to understand here. If not, one may get on to wrong conclusions. Now, I want to warn here using Brahmajala Sutta. There are 62 wrong views are showed, mentioned. And among those 62 wrong views, 49 happens because of the deep concentration levels. So when one attains deep concentration levels, if one is not able to come out of it, or rather not able to see drawbacks in it, not able to objectively look at it, if one has a wrong view, thinking that this is the end, or these are the various benefits of this, and likewise, so one is more into the in favor of this deep concentration, there's a higher possibility of getting into wrong views. But on the other hand, in this Chittanupassana section, Buddha is very carefully taking his disciple to a more wise level, more refined understanding, more knowledgeable level, that all these conditioned, all these highly concentrated states are also conditioned. They also have the nature to arise, and they also have the nature to pass away. They also are dependent on so many causes and conditions. They are not the ultimate. They are not the Nibbana. And very refined mental levels, mental states, concentrated states, are now becomes raw material for one's practice. Now this is very important and highly difficult to understand for a person who is so attached to concentrated states. But here Buddha very beautifully shows that he starts with developing some understanding about emotions. Now mind become fairly refined, and now even one understand when it is focused to something and when it is distracted, and it is well focused and absorbed to something, that also one can understand. And when it is getting to more and more refined states, when there is such kind of comparison going on, inclination towards higher states, that also one can understand. And when one is fairly contented in that highly concentrated state, that also one can understand. And even when one reaches Chetovimutti, liberation of mind, that also one can understand. But all these things are not the permanent solution. All these levels are merely conditioned. So in Chittanupassana, so therefore one is looking at all these levels objectively, and there one is developing fair amount of wisdom that all these have the nature to arise, all these have the nature to pass away. Samudaya dhammanupassīva cittasmin viharati, vaya dhammanupassīva cittasmin viharati. Samudaya vaya dhammanupassīva cittasmin viharati. Now when one does like that, then Buddha says, atti cittantiva panassa satipacchu pattita hoti. There is mind, there are concentrated states, there are various mental states, and they are not permanent, they are not mine. You can't expect lasting happiness from this, because they have the nature to come and go. Yava deva jnanamattaya patissati mattaya. And now he is using all these various mental states further to develop mindfulness, to broaden his wisdom, to broaden his understanding about all these mental states. More and more one does it, so mind becomes more clear, unattached, free from any sort of conditioned things, and mind becomes fairly unassociative. Not attached to any sort of a bodily process, not attached to any kind of a feeling, and not even attached to any kind of a mental emotion or any thought or anything. So mind has become completely unassociated, not attached to anything in the world. So Buddha ends telling, Anissitocha viharati nachakinchi loke upadide. Now one tries to keep one's mind completely free, not attached with anything, not grasping anything in the world. So this is something that maybe happens temporarily at the moment, temporarily at the beginning. Then one has to employ some sort of a restrainment in order to develop this unattached state, this complete liberated state, this complete free state, unassociated state. In order to have that, one needs fair amount of restrainment. One needs sila, and lot of clarity of mind is necessary. Samahita, the clarity of mind, collectedness of the mind is required. So one understand the need of a samadhi, need of a clarity of the mind. This is not that absorbing level of samadhi, but rather to see all these conditioned nature. So that clarity of mind is required. So he knows the level of that clarity. If it is less, then again mind get sort of corrupted with various states, various defilements. But if it is too much, then again mind get stuck in that higher concentration. So understanding the balance is very important. Now, further improvement he understand is required. There are still various defilements in the mind, various sort of hidden tendencies, various traits are there. So the development of the wisdom is required. So the Sila Samadhi Panya, he understands is the path. So likewise, in this Chittanupassana section, we can say Buddha is taking us, starting with this typical wholesome and unwholesome levels, then get into understanding very refined absorptions, and even to go beyond that, even looking at them as conditioned levels, conditioned states of mind, and to use all these levels as a raw material for our vipassana, as a raw material for the understanding of the conditioned nature, impermanent nature, unsatisfactory nature, non-self nature. So if one has that deeper understanding, so he's going to sort of have a mind which is free from everything, not attached to anything, not grasping anything in the world. So that is the sort of ultimate result we can understand in this section, Anissitocha viharati nachakinchi loke upadeti. So in this section also, therefore, we can say, Buddha first of all establish ourselves in the various mental states, satipatthana, and then he is giving instructions to see the arising and passing away nature, to see the reality, to see the behavior of these various mental states, satipatthana bhavana. And when one has developed fair amount of mindfulness, clear comprehension, wisdom, then one recognizes that is a complete path has to be followed, that I have to sort of grow in that path, I have to further develop in that path. So he understands from his own practice, Sila Samadhi Panya, there is morality necessary, sort of discipline is required, clarity of mind is required, and the wisdom has to be further developed. So one is getting to Noble Eightfold Path. So the Satipatthana Bhavana Gaminincha Patipada he recognizes. So with that, I like to conclude the Chittanupassana section, which is very interesting and very challenging in a way, and again very comprehensive. Now, if you compare the typical, mindfulness talking today, is more, we can say, Buddha's mindfulness, that the depth of the mindfulness that Buddha talks is very comprehensive and very deep, and it is very complete. So with that note, I like to conclude today's sutta teaching. Now I open the session for questions.
For any new friends that's joining us for the first time, you may ask your questions directly by raising your hand, or you can send them to me via the chat. So Bente, one of the questions is, can you please help clarify the difference between mindfulness and clear comprehension? When you have mindfulness, do you naturally develop clear comprehension?
We can't say that we naturally develop clear comprehension, but rather Buddha's teaching, various kamatahan, various techniques, tools that Buddha shows, is actually slowly directing us towards that development of clear comprehension. Say, for example, the establishment of mindfulness in breathing. At the beginning, we know, okay, there is in-breath happens. There is out-breath happens. There is in-breath, there is out-breath. Continuously assume one after the other in-breaths and out-breaths are happening. Again and again, we are able to establish ourselves on the in-breath, establish ourselves on the out-breath. So that is where the establishment of mindfulness. But now Buddha does not keep us there continuously, rather he invites us to see various facets of this breathing process. He is asking us to sort of search, to examine whether the in-breath is long, whether the in-breath is short, whether the out-breath is long, whether the out-breath is short, from which nostril is it happening, whether it is, say, warm or cool. So likewise, so this is where the examination starts. So this is where the clear comprehension starts. Now you are trying to clearly comprehend the phenomena. You are not just staying on the phenomena, not just being mindful, rather you are now carefully examining the process, carefully examining the object. Then only you are able to recognize various facets, various qualities of the process. Now therefore we can say the establishment of mindfulness is something, one thing, sati, and the clear comprehension is another thing. But later this starts to go hand in hand. So therefore we have the coin word sati sampajanya. Mindfulness and clear comprehension. Mindfulness actually, without mindfulness, actually clear comprehension is impossible. So therefore, as you develop mindfulness, so Buddha's teaching, Buddha's various techniques given us, helps us to develop clear comprehension in a way, in a gradual way. So later, even one is able to recognize various stages of the breath. Not that just the in-breath, but rather there's a beginning of in-breath, there's a middle of in-breath, there's an end of in-breath, there's a gap. So likewise, very subtle aspects of the breath can be recognized. So that indicates that improvement of clear comprehension. Yeah.
And for the next question, I'd like to invite Deepa.
I have two questions. I'll ask the first question. When you describe that when you start observing the thought process from another thought process, and the number of thoughts become less, and then that allows you to look at the more details like a beginning and the end. So when I was thinking about this one, I wonder whether when you have a clear mind, you have more sharp mind, can that have a different way of looking at the beginning, at the end? Like, for example, if you increase the sampling frequency, that you do 1 hertz frequency, you look at something versus 10 megahertz, you can see more detail. But when you become your mind more clear, then you will be able to see more. So either is it really the number of thoughts changes, or is it your frequency, the capabilities become increasing?
I think
Now, the capability, the resolution in a way also develops. That's why at the beginning, you know, I mean, if we get into, say, Anapanasati as a beginning, assume that at the beginning, you only know at the moment it is in-breath happens. Now, out-breath happens. You have only that information. But as you improve the resolution, as you improve the frequency, that is the thin slicing of time, now you can see even different stages are there. It is not maybe a single breath. There are, say, 5 breaths are there. It's not a single out-breath. It may be a kind of a collection of 5 out-breaths are there. So likewise, so you are able to sort of disintegrate the process. You are now removing the compactness. Now it becomes a kind of a group. Now, as it is a group, then there are some minute in-breaths happen. And each minute in-breath you can clearly recognize. So that indicates the resolution of the mind. That indicates the frequency of the mind, as you say. And this indicates the clarity of the mind as well. Now, the important thing is, now, logically, we think this may increase continuously. So more and more information will be available, more and more information will be available. So this is a kind of a never-ending process. We are constantly improving the resolution of the mind. Continuously, more and more information will be going to be available. But this happened in a different way. So as you improve the resolution, as you improve the thin slicing of the time of the mind, the information available reaches to some threshold and ultimately they start to disappear. Because you are recognizing the nature of these phenomena. You recognize that this minute sensation has a nature to arise and pass away. It's very rapid. Very quickly, there are various sensations. Now you can't even recognize, distinguish whether it is in-breath or out-breath. There's a kind of a sensation is there. And you can't even locate where it is. It is somewhere, but you know it very clearly. And all these very rapid sensations come and go, arise and pass away. So as you develop this kind of a wisdom, then due to this rapidity, so you can't even take a sign of this process. Now the complete process is going to be changed in a different way. Now, because of its rapidity, you can't get the signs, you can't see the boundaries. Now everything appears like a flux. Now it is all our energies. It's no more a kind of physical thing, but everything becomes sort of an energy. You can't now distinguish whether it is in-breath or out-breath or where it is, whether it is the beginning, this is the end. Everything appears like a flux. Now slowly, mind gives up the whole thing. You get on to a different level. So these physical processes have their nature to arise and pass away. They are extremely transient. But your mind has a capacity to be free from all these. So this is the kind of perspective change happens in the mind. So you understand, all these processes are utterly vulnerable, utterly transient. So why am I holding it? Is there any purpose of attaching to it? Is there any purpose of grasping it? So the mind itself starts to be away from it, be free from it. Further, it starts to detach from it, try to disclaim this process. So this is the change going to happen in the mind. So therefore, I mean, it is true that what you are telling, if we approach it logically, we can say we are constantly improving the resolution of the mind, frequency of the mind, so the detail going to be available will come more and more. But there's this kind of a change happens in the mind.
Thank you, Anthony. I have another question.
Yeah.
At the beginning, I talked about the mindfulness, improving mindfulness and working the breathing, and then later looking more detail, like whether it's a long or short breath. So one of the confusion I have is like For me, long and short is always a relative term.
Yeah.
So to know whether something is long or short, we have to remember what was before. And so then, are we losing our mindfulness when you do that?
No, actually, one aspect of mindfulness, one benefit of mindfulness is this memory. So, you know, Buddha at one, mindfulness is a kind of an evolving quality. So it is not merely depending on the present moment. So as we develop mindfulness, the memory, improved memory is another side benefit we are getting. So, and again here, the long or short, that memory is kind of only related to the previous breath. When compared to the previous in-breath, is the present in-breath long or short? When compared to the previous out-breath, is the present out-breath long or short? So it is not that we are trying to compare with an in-breath happened several months ago, but in just a previous moment, there is an in-breath happened. Compared to that, what is the length of the present in-breath? So likewise, this is not a difficult thing as you continue. And again, not only that, as you develop mindfulness, the memory become improved. So that is another side benefit we have. And therefore, we are not going out of mindfulness. The mindfulness helps us to, actually mindfulness has the capacity to do it.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, thank you. So for the next question, I'd like to invite Mahisha. Mahisha, can you unmute your mic?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, thank you. Bhante, I have two questions. I'll be quick with both. One of them is actually...
You have muted your mic. Please check your mic.
Okay. Hope it's okay now.
Yes.
Okay. So I said I have two questions. So the first one is, I followed Lukaswami Mahansi's and yours Dharma talks in past like weeks, and kind of a progress. Many merits for that. And if I get back where I was today and yesterday with my meditation, I was actually with the state of, you know, falling myself like to a sleep mode, and then, but I recognize it's not really sleep, but deep samadhi. Whereas then I got the kamatan that very deep samadhi is also not the perfect thing. We need to balance that. So I then got hang of, you know, how to balance it and go towards, you know, taking some mind towards some thoughts, you know, yeah. So getting into the thoughts and then coming. I'm not purposely going, but the thoughts are coming and I watch it, but I don't take it. So instead of saying the mind walking around, I look at it like the outside signals or things coming towards my mind. And I try to understand them, identify them and say, just ignore them, just watch them and then they walk away. So that's the procedure I undertake, and I don't like to say that my mind is walking. Instead, I say to myself, the outside signals are coming towards me, and it's knock on the gate, and then they just go because the gate is closed.
Yeah.
So like that, I keep on watching. The yesterday's and today's stuff like that, but today I actually went to deep samadhi, which... Then I afterwards I realized that I actually went too much deep samadhi. So I need to, I kind of, you know, balancing these days that. So that's what the kamathan I understood, that the kamathan I got. My question is, now I was listening to your talk today as well about the chitta anupassana, many merits for that. I try to practice in that way in day-to-day life, like when the thoughts are coming, I can identify them. And through that, I may be able to let them walk away. So the question is, it's like I'm getting like we need to study a lot and lot. The learning process is going on, and just a thought came to my mind saying, do we really need to learn in detail this Dhamma one by one to walk into the path of Nibbana? That's my first question.
Yeah, actually when you are getting to Vipassana, so understanding of the Dhamma practically is one aspect, and proper guidance coming from the Buddha's teaching is the other aspect. So if both are happening, then it is very easy for us, because we are quite happy about what we are doing, and it is not that we are simply going on our own private path, but rather this is a kind of a very ancient path that we are following. It is not that my own private initial path, but there are many arahants, many Buddhas have practiced this same path. I am also now confidently going in the correct path. So that kind of a confidence develop as we do sort of a comparison, as we do kind of an understanding, if we do have that kind of an understanding about Buddha's teaching. Actually, that is the whole purpose of this session also, where we are trying to sort of look at various teachings from the Buddha, various suttas from the Buddha, and we are trying to get some guidance from that, some light from those Buddha's teaching, so that we are become more confident, we understand, okay, we are in the correct track. So it is necessary to understand the suttas and the Buddha's teaching in the proper perspective. If one is wrongly defining, if one is misinterpreting them, so then the listeners may go in wrong direction. So that is also another side that we need to understand. So anyway, having some understanding about Buddha's teaching is necessary. So that's why Buddha mentioned in Anuggahita Sutta that if one is supporting one's practice in five ways, so then it is better, higher possibility that one reaches one's goal. First starts with morality, Sila Anuggahita, then the Sutta Anuggahita, that is where you are listening to Buddha's teaching, you are keeping it in your mind. Then there's the Sakaccha Anuggahita, you do a good discussion. And then the Samatha Anuggahita, you are developing concentration when it is necessary. And the Vipassana Anuggahita, you are developing wisdom. So therefore Buddha asks us to support our practice in these four, in these five manners, in these five aspects. So that actually gives a complete picture, fairly complete way, five different ways of support that may really generate good atmosphere in our mind, and it may sort of helps us to smoothly attain our goal.
Do you have a second part to your question? Okay, looks like she is muted.
Looks like she. Sorry, I thought that you have attained.
Yeah, I lost connection time to time, but that's okay. I will listen to the recording for the complete answer.
Fine.
My next question is, Bande, sometimes when I'm practicing the meditation, like, you know, with the day-to-day course, we forget certain things.
Yeah.
Is that a normal thing?
Yeah. It is not that we can't, keep everything in our mind. It's true that, even though now I am preaching to you, certain aspects later may go out of my memory. But time to time, when we are listening and again we are sort of discussing, so we are not losing the complete track. But we are, because Buddha's teaching actually have one goal. That is the liberation, in a way. Vimutti rasa, that is the quality, the taste of the Buddha's teaching, one can say, Buddha say, is the freedom. So, and whenever we are discussing Buddha's teaching, Dhamma, so then then we can say we are rejuvenating, we are sort of charging the battery so that we can continue the path confidently. So it is quite difficult to, I mean, keep everything in the mind, and it is not required. But more and more we are in the path, more and more we associate the Kalyana Mittas, so the function may happen smoothly.
Thank you very much, Pante.
Thank
you. And for the next question, what is the difference between feelings and emotions?
Actually, we can say the feelings are the earliest stages of emotions, and as we more become a victim of the feelings, so they become aggravated, they become developed, and starts to get on to some overwhelming level. So there we sort of really feel them in a more gross manner. So there we call it as an emotion. But as we develop mindfulness, so we may recognize the emotions because they are vivid, they are easy to understand. But slowly as we develop mindfulness, they may not develop to very high levels. And slowly, and again, it may not last for a long time. Now we know how to handle emotions, and we become less emotional. And later, we can even recognize the beginning of an emotion. So that means we are at the level of feelings, where we understand, okay, there's a pleasurable feeling. We understand there's a painful feeling. We understand there's a, say, neutral feeling. So that is where we are coming to the root. And there are, if one is able to understand like that, so then one becomes less emotional because you are not promoting that feeling. So that is the source of the emotion.
Thank you,
Pante. Yep.
The next question I'd like to invite Radhika to please ask.
Thank you, Jennifer. Bhante, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
My question is about my sitting meditation, but it also touches my daily life. So it's like two questions.
Yeah.
So when I'm doing sitting meditation, generally, my mind is very calm, very fairly soon. The breath is very, very short. And I have to be very, very vigilant because if not, I tend to get drowsy. But I have looked at my mind at this stage, and it's very calm, and there is no defilements or anger or desire or anything. And at this stage, I sometimes look at the rest of my body, and I can feel the pressure on my bottom where I'm seated, sometimes on my ankle. I do that because if not, I sometimes fall asleep. So if I'm getting very, very calm, I try to keep vigilant so that I don't. Now, in my daily life, I have found that sometimes when I'm doing something else, thoughts will arise and I might feel some emotion based on the thoughts. But I can identify pretty soon that I'm worrying or I'm anxious about something. And so I will let it go and let it pass and continue with what I'm doing. Now, something that I enjoy in my daily life is to watch a movie of a comedy or a documentary. And I find that when I'm enjoying that, I'm enjoying it and I'm laughing with it. And if it's a sad thing that I'm watching a documentary, then I will be sad. Now, this doesn't usually affect me in the rest of my daily life or my meditation. So is it okay for me to include documentaries and comedies in my daily life?
Very interesting. So I think we as human beings need some kind of some kind of a stimulation, because we can't completely become sort of a numb people or dumb people, but we need some happiness, some pleasure that is also required. And so how we implement this happiness, this is what we need to be careful. Now, if the way we implement happiness is harmless, then no problem. So Buddha actually recommend, it is naturally, Buddha didn't completely deny the happiness. There are various feelings, pleasurable feelings, painful feelings and neutral feelings. And Buddha say, if any kind of feeling promotes wholesomeness, then associate it. If any kind of feeling promotes any negativity in the mind, any kind of a delusion in the mind, then Buddha says, don't associate it. So there are various pleasures available, and once we associate that sort of a pleasure, if it is making us somewhat happy, light-minded, and we are free from depression, and some positive qualities are improving, positive atmosphere is developing in the mind, so that indicates that we are getting certain benefits from that kind of an association. So then we can continue. But on the other hand, assume that before we associate these feelings, assume that our mind was clean, there is no any anger, there is no any lust, but because of the association of this, assume that now mind become angry, now mind become really agitated, now mind become really confused, then that kind of an association is not useful. So therefore we ourselves have to decide, so whether it is useful or not. Buddha never deny the association of any particular kind of feelings. Rather, he give the sort of open attitude where we can associate anything, but we have to be responsible in checking whether it has contributed towards the improvement of my well-being of the mind, or is it really sort of destroyed the well-being of the mind, or really harmed the well-being of the mind. And as you said, sometimes being with the other people, cracking a joke and having a good laugh is necessary. We can't simply be dumb. So therefore, find your balance.
Thank you, Baldev. To be honest, I have realized that if I watch news, I get very upset, and so I have cut that down.
Right.
Especially living in this part of the world.
Right.
And what's going on in my neighbor's country, in USA, it is very difficult not to be affected.
Right.
So that's why we are trying more to watch comedies or documentaries, because you put the TV on, it's always breaking news.
Right. So it breaks you as well.
Yes, it does. It affects. That's why I'm trying to cut the part down.
Good, good.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thank you. For the next question, I'd like to invite Chitra Devi.
Thank you. Bhante, my question is, from the way I understand and the way you explain this sutta that the Buddha has taught, is mainly for vipassana. Would that be right if I say that?
Yeah, I can say so. Because, I mean, we can't say it's pure vipassana, because at the beginning we basically establish mindfulness. And that we can say as samatha as well. It's a combination, we can say. Majority we can say as the vipassana. But first stages are fairly in parallel with samatha. Now say, for example, when one knows that there is in-breath, when one knows there is out-breath. So when clearly focus on the incoming breaths. So that is in a way a samatha. But without it, you can't get on to the clear comprehension and the other levels of vipassana. So it's a very beautiful blend of samatha and vipassana. But the majority is the vipassana, we can say.
And Bhante, now when we investigate, I mean, like, you know, we are looking at the characteristics of the breath and go deeper into the breath in terms of the characteristics,
mm-hmm.
Then are we actually moving away from samtadin.
Yeah, of course. Because whenever we are searching the characteristics, when we are investigating any kind of a phenomena, we are of course going out of samatha, we are stepping into vipassana. Actually, the beginning of clear comprehension is the beginning of vipassana, we can say. Because we are investigating. So this investigative attribute, is more towards the wisdom. So that is vipassana, we can say. Actually, we don't need to have a clear margin whether I am in samatha, whether I am in vipassana, because these are going hand in hand and they are contributing to each other, helping each other. So we have to get the benefit from both.
Because I find that when I look at the rising, the Jamdevaya, and I'm investigating, I also get more joy. So I was wondering whether that's a part of vipassana or whether it's a blend of samatha and vipassana.
No, actually, vipassana also has the joy. So that is where now when you get into bojjhanga, enlightenment factors, piti sambojjhanga is there. So all bojjhangas we can say fairly into the level of vipassana, and sati, dhamma vichaya, virya, piti, passaddi, samadhi, upekha. So likewise, seven enlightenment factors are listed. So among piti, so piti is the rupture. So that is not merely from samatha, but it is coming from that you have a good understanding. Now I am in line with Buddha's teaching even today, that I can realize it. So likewise, you get a kind of an honest rupture, honest happiness, niramisa piti. So that is necessary in the path, and Buddha encouraged that. So therefore, we can't say that the piti is only available in samatha. There are a lot of piti available in the vipassana as well. Now in Dhammapada also Buddha mentioned that, say when one is seeing the arising and passing away nature, lot of gladness, piti is arising in one's mind.
And you also then went on to say about the first jhana, and you said to step out of it and watch it. Now we, when we go, some teachers say we shouldn't interrupt when we have the jhana, we should just continue. So I got a little bit confused there.
Mm-hmm.
And also you went on to say the higher states, you have to step out. The world of space and nothingness and neither perception nor non-perception, we have to step out of those states and watch it. I got a bit confused, so I thought I'll ask you to clarify that, Bhante.
Yeah, actually, that is the Buddha's teaching. Buddha very categorically mentions, if you read Salleka Sutta, and Buddha get on to explain all these eight jhanas, Rupa Jhana and Arupa Jhana, and there he mentioned, so being in the jhana, if one say that I am contributing towards the eradication of defilements, then he is wrong. Rather, being in the jhana, one may enjoy kind of a pleasant abiding. That's all. That's all. But if you want to develop vipassana, if you want to develop sort of understanding, if you want to develop wisdom, you need to emerge from jhana. You have to use even that to see how impermanent it is, how conditioned it is, how vulnerable it is. And that is the way of developing vipassana. So that is why even if one is in the jhana for many days, it does not contribute much towards the wisdom.
Wisdom.
Yeah, that's why. Uh-huh. That's why Buddha encourages, even in this, and giving us a very good recipe here. And Buddha, and it shows how refined that Buddha has gone, how deep that Buddha has gone, even to understand the rising and passing away nature of these. Now, this Mahangatan Chittang, Amahangatan Chittang, Samahitan Chittang, Asamahitan Chittang clearly indicates the higher concentrations. So, now the advice is, Buddha says, Samude Dhamma Anupasiva Chittasming Viharati Vaya Dhamma Anupasiva Chittasming Viharati. So, that means all these very higher concentrated states have the nature to come and go, have the nature to arise, have the nature to pass away. They are not permanent. They are so conditioned. So if one is understanding this, so one's understanding this condition, nature is a must.
Yes. Yeah, because I tend to go, I mean, I am developing Vipassana because I know that I have to develop these terms, but I tend to go along with Samatha, so that's why I asked that question. So, yes, Bhante, so that's fine. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. And for the last question, I'd like to invite Sonali to please ask.
Thank you, Jennifer, and thank you, Bhante. I have a question about sila.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that we have to observe the sila, and that will help us with the meditation. And I observe 5 precepts. I think I do it to some extent. I guess I do it. I don't know. I'm confused about that. I don't know what that means.
What that means in the sense you don't know the meanings of the 5 precepts?
No, I know the meaning of it. I don't know how to gain confidence that you're observing the sila as much as you should, or how to reach a threshold that would affect your meditation.
Right.
How do you gain confidence in the fact that you are maintaining
so basically,
the proper amount of sila? I don't...
Yeah, basically, when you look back your mind, when you look at yourself, if there are no regrets telling that I did this wrong, I did that wrong because of my wrong activity, that the other person got really upset, he was really hurt, and I also got really hurt. So likewise, if we have that kind of a complaining mind, if we have such a accusing mind, so that means something wrong in our sila. But on the other hand, if our mind is telling now you are a good person, you deserve more happiness, you deserve more growth in the spiritual side when compared to my previous stages in my life, you are now a good person. So likewise, if there is that sort of a positive atmosphere in the mind, so that means that you are maintaining good sila.
Okay, my sila is better than it used to be,
right?
And but I do have that regretting mind all the time.
Mm-hmm. About what?
And I was wondering if the regretting mind is because I'm much more sensitive and more aware of my thoughts,
right?
Than I was ever before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that's what it is. I'm constantly regretting about things that just came to my mind that I didn't even do.
Right.
That the fact that I just thought that is kind of disturbing.
Right. So that is where the mindfulness practice actually helps. That, I mean, you don't need to own, you don't need to claim these thoughts as yours. Various thoughts may come, various regretting thoughts may come, and how to look at them objectively, rather than being a victim of it, rather than driven by it, how are you able to step back and watch them? So that is the practice. So start from very kayanupassana. So there are, say, while you are watching breath, so there are many distracting thoughts coming. Maybe they are regretting thoughts, but simply ignore them and returning back to the breath. So likewise, you are developing certain skill not to being carried away by all these regretting thoughts. Rather, you can establish mindfulness on where it is necessary. So as you develop these qualities, so it's of course that the sensitivity of the mind develops. But also you develop some controllability of the mind. You have a choice. You either can regret or you can establish mindfulness on some physical process. Later, all these regrets become raw material for your practice. So that is, we are in the Chittanupassana. So even the regretting thoughts, they are merely thoughts. They have the nature to come and go. They have the nature to arise and pass away. So you are using even those for your improvement of wisdom. So therefore, at the moment, kayanupassana, so that you have some control in your mind, you don't need to simply be a victim of these regretting thoughts, then you can be free from these regretting thoughts.
Okay, Bhante, thank you very much. Okay. Sadhu.
You're welcome. Okay, now we have spent almost 1.5 hours in our sutta teaching session, and I like to wind up today's session by sharing medicine with everybody. එතාවතාච අම්හෙහි සම්බතං පුඤ්ඤ සම්පදං සම්බේ දේවා අනුමෝදන්තු සම්බ සම්පත්ති සිද්ධියා එතාවතාච අම්හෙහි සම්බතං පුඤ්ඤ සම්පදං සම්බේ භූතා අනුමෝදන්තු සම්බ සම්පත්ති සිද්ධියා එතාවතාච අම්හෙහි සම්බතං පුඤ්ඤ සම්පදං සම්බේ සත්තා අනුමෝදන්තු සම්බ සම්පත්ති සිද්ධියා ආකාසට්ඨා ච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවා නාග මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත्वा චිරං රක්ඛන්තු සාසනං ආකාසට්ඨා ච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවා නාග මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත्वा චිරං රක්ඛන්තු දේශනං ආකාසට්ඨා ච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවා නාග මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත्वा චිරං රක්ඛන්තු මම් පරං ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හුන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හුන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හුන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගම සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගම සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගම සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා සාදු සාදු සාදු.
Thank you, Pante.
Teruvan Saranai. Yeah, Teruvan Saranai. And I have a small announcement, by the way. Sorry, I forgot to tell you that next Wednesday, it seems that I won't be able to conduct the session. So the next session will be on, that means 3rd. Am I correct, Jennifer?
Okay, so we will skip next week's session and continue the week after.
Yes, yes.
Sure. Okay. I will notify everyone.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Teruvan Saranai.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
Teruvan Saranai.
Teruvan Saranai.
Thank you, Bhante. Teruvan Saranai.
Teruvan Saranai.
Teruvan Saranai, Bhante.
Teruvan Saranai.
Teruvan Saranai.